Hey there, welcome to the Cultivated Family Podcast. I'm Megan Hillica, and this is where we dive into grief and loss and all that I've learned through the loss of my daughter, Aria. I want to share tools and the things I've learned along the way to help me carry my grief, along with interviews and stories of other people who have experienced pain and heartache in their life, and how we can, as friends, support one another through our tough times so that we can have the joys again as well. You are not alone, my friend, so let's dive in. This is episode 15, and I'm your host, Megan Hillica. Today's guest is Krista St. Germain, a grief coach who works specifically with widows, as she is a widow herself. But this conversation seriously fires me up. I love everything Krista shares, and I love the work that she's doing. I also want to thank Krista for being so patient with me during the interview, because I had to keep running to take care of my kids. I had a babysitter that day, but they were sick, and so she didn't come. And I learned that in the future, I will just reschedule the interview rather than try to get them occupied with something and still try to do the interview, because it did not work so well. So you might hear my kids in the background sometimes. But this interview and all the knowledge Krista brings to it is so amazing. So let's just dive in. Hi, Krista. Welcome to the Cultivated Family Podcast. I am so excited to talk to you. I've listened to your podcast for a while since you started, and it is just amazing. And I'm so excited to hear what you have to say today.
Yay. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So can you share with us how you came to know grief in your life?
Yes, absolutely. So August 1st, actually July 31st, I was coming home from a trip with my husband. We had been gone for a few days and we had driven separately, and I had a flat tire on the way home. And so got out of the car, pulled over and called him, and he pulled up behind me and was going to help me. He wanted to change the tire on the car. We had AAA, but you know, typical guy. He just, no, let me do it. And so went to change the tire on the car, and I was over on the side of the road texting my daughter to let her know that we would be late so she wouldn't worry. And another driver, we were on the side of the interstate, pretty close to where I live, but another driver who we later found out had meth and alcohol in his system. Just, we don't know if he didn't see us. We had our hazard lights on, but he didn't brake, crashed right into the back of Hugo's Durango and trapped him in between his car and my car. And so for me, my introduction to grief was instantaneous. And, you know, it was less than 12, 14 hours later, and he was gone. And there was grief.
Yeah, and it's a pretty traumatic event too that played out for you guys. This wasn't on my questionnaire thing that I had sent to you, but have you felt like you had any lasting trauma from that, or like the experience of PTSD or being like replaying that over and over in your mind?
Yeah, I wasn't diagnosed with PTSD, but knowing enough about it, I definitely did have some impact from the trauma. So specifically for me, the sound of the accident, when I would hear noises that were similar to that, it would take me back to the accident in a heartbeat. I mean, it was just instant where my heart would be pounding and I would feel that fear again. So that sound of metal. Also, anything to do with CPR or hospitals, flashing lights on the side of the road, like anything from that period of time that had a really intense and powerful emotion associated with it, I had to work through. For the most part, I'm on the other side of that. But definitely it was there. And tapping, EFT.
Yeah. Yes. I've been learning about that. Yeah.
Huge help for me. And I do a lot of that with my clients.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. I've been learning so much about that, and I'm glad to hear your story with that. So EFT, I've been learning about that so much, and it is just, I've been doing it on myself, and it's amazing how much that anxiety or
I get a lot in my chest and how much it disappears when you're doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I use it for lots of different reasons. And on a regular basis for things unrelated to trauma, but I find it particularly useful. Or at least it was for me in that area.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So you talk a lot about post-traumatic growth. Can you explain what it is and how you use it to help the widows that you coach?
Yeah. Yeah. So post-traumatic growth is basically kind of a, it feels new. I think it's really a phrase that was coined in the mid 90s, but feels still relatively new in that most people aren't aware of it. You know, they're familiar with post-traumatic stress disorder, but they really haven't heard of post-traumatic growth. But basically it's the idea that we used to think that once something happened that was considered traumatic, that our best bet was just to get back to a baseline of wellness, just to go from dysfunction to function. And post-traumatic growth teaches that we can actually use a trauma as a springboard to growth that takes us beyond in a few key areas that experience that we were having before. So we can actually have, you know, an increased connection with people in our lives. We can have, you know, a better sense of openness to possibilities. We can be, consider ourselves stronger internally than we did before, right? Oftentimes people have stronger sense of spiritual connection. And so instead of thinking as trauma as something that is really just a roadblock in our way to getting back to normal, it's a complete reframe that now it's actually an opportunity. We want it. And so that's how I use it, right? Is when you have something that happens that is shakes you to your very core, right? Completely levels what you had built in your life and your all of your self-conceptions. Like everything has come crashing down. Then we can rebuild, essentially, but we can also pause and take the opportunity and say, okay, if I'm going to rebuild, instead of just rebuilding what I already had without really thinking about it, and of course you can't rebuild exactly what you had, right?
Yeah.
But what can I use in this experience that I can take with me moving forward to create even more of what I want in the future to align with what's important to me, right? If I'm going to rebuild the building, why don't I build it in the most powerful way possible? And so that's what I work with women on doing is, yes, this thing happened to you. For most of my clients, you know, they're widows. This happened. We didn't ask for it to happen. We didn't want it to happen, but it did. And here we are. So first we need to figure out how we're going to accept that it happened and come to terms with it. Then now what? What do we want to create in the future? And so often, because nobody ever talks about growth, we think that our only option is just to return to this kind of blah normal.
Okay.
And we don't consider the possibility that we actually can stop and design a life that we want and then create it for ourselves. We're so much more powerful than we give ourselves credit for, and post-traumatic growth really speaks to that.
Yeah, that's amazing. I feel like I've experienced that after my loss too. I lost my daughter Aria now a little over 3 years ago. And it is amazing. It's hard to explain to other people. And I'm just like, how do you help others understand this, or how do you coach them through this? What can you know, somebody who's listening even start to do to take this into their own lives?
Yeah, slowly and gently. Yeah, I coach my clients through it, but it really all starts with the ability to discern what we can control and what we can't control, because usually we have those things very confused. And so having the idea that we can't control things we can, or that we can control things we can't, leaves us fairly miserable.
Yeah. Right?
Always trying to to control other people and events outside of us, or feeling victim to other people or victim to things in our past. And so one of the first things I do with my clients, and one of the first things people who are listening can do, although it is easier to do with a coach, but is to really separate what is factual versus how we're interpreting it.
Okay. Yep.
Because there are things that exist in the world, events of the past, data, math, things that if everyone in the whole world were in the same room, we could all agree on. And then there is how we interpret that information. And what exists in the world is outside of our control. And it doesn't cause our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
What causes our feelings and then drives our actions is the story that we tell ourselves about what it is that happened. And so we want to be very clear in understanding what exists objectively as fact in the world and outside of our control versus what is the story we're telling about it? What are we making it mean? What are we creating emotionally for ourselves? And is that in service of what we want? And so often it's not, but we don't even know that it's optional. We just think when we're telling our story that we're just telling people the news. We're just telling people the way that it is. And so I help my clients kind of hold up a mirror to their brain and see when it is story and teach them the skill of being able to discern that for themselves so that they can solve their own problems.
Okay. So I listened to Brooke Castillo's podcast. That's where I heard you first. And I love the model that she teaches. And I'm trying to, in my own mind with grief, because I know it's so important to feel our emotions as well and sit with them and even to begin to understand, okay, what are the thoughts that I'm thinking that's causing these emotions, but maybe I'm not ready to let go of that emotion yet.
Yeah.
So how do you balance the like working on your thoughts and paying attention to your thoughts with also allowing yourself to grieve?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And really what grief is, right? I mean, it's a natural response to loss and it is thoughts causing feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So the foundation for this work has to be the understanding that there are no good or bad thoughts. There are no good or bad feelings. There are just thoughts and there are feelings. And so if you go into this work that Brooke teaches, which is the model, and you know, she's of course my mentor and teacher, and you think the point of it is to feel positive emotions, you're missing the point.
Okay, yep.
The point of it is not to feel positive emotion or negative emotion, right? The point of it is to understand that we are the creator of our emotional experience. And then when we have that awareness, we get to choose. We get to choose what we want to create. And so what many of my clients have been trying desperately to do is get away from negative emotion.
Yeah.
And so I have to go back and teach them how to feel it, how to allow it, that it's not a problem that it's there, right? They don't need to get away from it. And it's their effort to get away from it that's making things worse.
Yeah.
So first, we're not trying to find a better feeling thought. We're just trying to notice that right now I feel sad and that's okay, right?
Yeah.
Right now I feel angry and that is not a problem. Anger is not a problem. I'm angry because I'm thinking this thought, right? He shouldn't have left. Or, you know, I have clients whose husbands died by suicide and, you know, they've got anger there. Sometimes clients are angry with, you know, God or angry with themselves, but I feel angry because I'm thinking this thought and it's okay. And I can process this anger. I can allow it. And when I allow it, then it can move through me. I'm not going to bottle it up, not going to make things worse. So we have to be just very careful that when you learn your thoughts cause your feelings, you don't automatically jump to, well, I'm just going to only think happy thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the first reaction that you want to do, because nobody wants to sit with the more painful emotions.
Yeah, but we're not taught the value of that.
Yeah, yeah. And I have learned definitely, I think that's why Brooke's work resonates with me so much is because I have learned that sitting with that pain, it almost even helps with that post-traumatic growth. Like it is that sitting with that pain and working through it and allowing it to be there helps you become emotionally stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. And the alternatives are really create some very unuseful things in our lives, right? If we don't allow negative emotion to process, then we end up creating more of it, right? We end up creating more of it. Or a lot of times what I see is that we try to avoid it by covering it up with a behavior. So we end up over drinking or overeating or shopping or, you know, busying ourselves. And we're even told that, right? Oh, just keep busy, dear.
Yeah,
just
totally. Yeah.
And it's not that being busy is a bad thing, but sometimes what's really the most beneficial is just to figure out how to feel a feeling and let it pass.
Yeah.
So it doesn't hold you hostage anymore.
Yeah.
Did you know that I have a completely free community on Facebook for grieving mothers? You have to answer a couple questions in order to get in because I want it to be a safe space for grieving moms. I would love if you came and joined us. It's called Living with Grief, Child Loss with Megan Hillica. I share stuff on there. I go live in there. I would love if you would come and find support and support others. It's a great place to not be so alone in your grief and find others who are walking the same path as you. So again, that's Living with Grief, Child Loss with Megan Hillica. I'd love to see you in there.
So what is the difference between pain and suffering then?
Yes. So I love the kind of Buddhist philosophy on pain versus suffering, which is that pain is a natural part of life. It's supposed to be there, right? We're supposed to have emotional and physical pain. We need physical pain because physical pain helps us see when there's a problem with our body, right? That we need to turn our attention to. And emotional pain is there because it's necessary to have contrast. If we had happy emotions all the time and only happy emotions all the time, they wouldn't be happy. They wouldn't be so happy. They wouldn't mean anything because there would be nothing to compare them to. So emotional pain is also necessary, and it's just part of the human experience. Suffering, however, is what is man-made. Suffering is what we create when we think our pain shouldn't be there. When we resist feeling our pain, when we resist allowing our pain, when we judge it, when we blame ourselves, we blame others, we shame ourselves, then we pile all this negative emotion on top of the pain and we cause suffering. So pain is supposed to be there. Suffering is optional.
And that's so great because there is so much suffering and grief because I did too. I beat myself up over so many things of what should have happened, what I should have done differently. And there's so many of those thoughts that you have to work through and process. And it definitely makes it a lot worse or more suffering than it needs to be.
Yeah.
It's definitely something that needs to be worked through. The other thing I wanted to say was when we're talking about emotions aren't good or bad, if you just imagine that it's 50%, we're, you know, 50% of the time we're supposed to be happy and 50% of the time, whatever, however that goes, feel negative emotions and positive emotions. 50% of the time, then we're not trying to be 100% of the time happy.
Right. Because we create so much unhappiness when we notice unhappiness and we tell ourselves we should be happier. When if we just went, oh, this is the part of life where I feel upset. And that's okay. It's part of the human experience that I'm going to feel upset. I don't have to try and fix it. It's not broken.
Yeah.
Then we don't create anything. We don't create additional layers of pain on top of pain on top of pain. We just go, yes, this is pain.
It's really amazing when you recognize that in your own life. It's really life changing.
Yes.
I've noticed it for myself. It's so, you know, there's that initial response of like, oh, I'm feeling this way. I need to get out of this immediately.
Yeah. Like, that's what led me to life coaching in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Was I was at a point in my life where my thought was, I'm not happy and I should be happier.
Mm-hmm.
All of the signs point towards what I thought you're supposed to have as a middle-aged woman.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed, I had two kids, husband, house, job, all of the things mm-hmm. looked like they were where our culture tells us they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
But yet I'm not happy. What's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
If I had known then, I'm glad I didn't actually. If I had known then the 50-50 concept, I probably wouldn't have discovered Brooke.
Yeah.
But it was that frustration that actually led me to find life coaching.
Yeah, that it is amazing. Anyways, I just did want to comment on your podcast that anybody listening should go listen to. It's the Widowed Mom podcast, right?
Thank you. And yeah, the Widowed Mom podcast.
Yeah. The one that you told about the stories we tell ourselves, I just thought those were so powerful, the three different ways you told mm-hmm. your story. And I've thought that in my own life, you know, like thought about it for my story. And I really want to do that on my podcast as well, because I think that's so incredibly, like, you can change the way you're thinking about it, or it changes the way you feel about it by the way you tell the story
yes.
to yourself.
Yeah. And that speaks back to your question about, you know, what do I do with my clients and what's the first thing people listening can do?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you can only retell your story in a way that serves you when you recognize it's possible, when you mm-hmm. recognize that your story is a story.
Yeah.
But most often when we're telling our story, we just think we're recounting the facts.
Yeah. Yep.
And that was exactly what I was trying to demonstrate with that episode, is here's the dramatic story my brain wants to tell me about what happened to my husband. Here's just the facts with no interpretation or emotional charge. And then here is a way that I can tell this story in a way that is empowering and useful to me in my life and mm-hmm. has me no longer as the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And that's everything.
Yeah. And the third story you told about yourself was a lot gentler to yourself, you mm-hmm. know, rather than I should have done this, I should have done that. How come I was so dumb to not do this, you know? But then when you,
yes.
in the third story, then you're have a lot more compassion for yourself.
Yeah. So much suffering in the first
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
Right. And then none in the second or in the third. Yeah.
Yeah. I just love this. All the stuff you are teaching and the stuff you're doing, it's amazing. I will keep listening to your podcast. Are you ready to dive into the cultivating compassion questions? They're
yeah.
questions I ask at the end of every
you bet.
Episode. All right. What is one thing you could offer to someone who is struggling and feels really alone in their pain?
I think this is one of the biggest things that plague us when we are in pain, is that we think it's just us.
Mm-hmm.
And when we think we're the only ones, that nobody understands, that we're doing it wrong, we're really doing ourselves such a disservice. So if we can just instead show ourselves some grace and some compassion and some love and stop beating ourselves up. I also think it's important to normalize the misconceptions, or I guess dispel the misconceptions about grief,
mm-hmm.
which I know you're doing with your podcast too.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we think there's some stages we're supposed to go through, then
yeah.
naturally we're going to start judging ourselves based on where we think we are in the stages, which you know, and I know you have taught is mm-hmm. It's not accurate. It's not relevant
yeah.
to grief. Or if we think, I see this in my clients a lot. If we think there's a timeline, then we're going to start comparing ourselves
mm-hmm.
to this timeline. And I don't know why it is that our culture teaches us that something magical happens when we're a year away from a
yeah.
major loss.
Yeah.
Nothing magical
no.
happens at a mm-mm. year. So if you can just know that all of it is normal, all of the emotions are normal, you are not alone. You cannot do it wrong. And the experience that you need to have in your healing is going to be unique to you. There is no timeline. There are no stages. Just let it unfold and love yourself the best you can as you go.
Oh, that's very, very good advice, or I don't know. I don't know what to call it. Is it advice? Way of looking at things? Yeah.
Yeah.
What is one book that has encouraged you and helped you?
Okay. So I thought about this, and there are many books that have encouraged me and helped me. In the beginning, the ones that encouraged me and helped me the most were the little snippets, because I couldn't absorb anything. So some of those daily affirmation types of books where you just get a little bit at a, on a day, it was all I could absorb. The book that I've loved the most recently is Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach.
No, I've never heard of that one.
So good. Pretty much everything she writes is good. Okay. But really just, again, the power of what it's like to truly accept what has happened in your life and what's possible for you when you do. It's very, so good, and full of a lot of useful exercises as well and meditations.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have to check that one out. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. What do you wish someone who has never been through losing their spouse would understand?
I wish someone who's never been through losing their spouse would understand is how to talk to someone who has. And not because I think anybody's ever intentionally trying to cause harm. I think most people just want, you know, their friends and family members to feel better. And it's just, they're so uncomfortable and don't know what to say that it creates just a whole lot of unnecessary awkwardness. And so a question like, how are you, is very difficult for someone who's just gone through a major loss to know what to do with. Like,
Which minute? Well, what second?
given the circumstances, I don't even know how to answer that question. So, you know, just helping them understand that just even if all you did was just say, hey, you know, how are you doing today? I think is such a useful thing. Also, I think people who have never lost a spouse or have never had significant loss tend to be very uncomfortable and don't know, do I talk to someone? Do I not talk to someone? Do I bring it up? Do I not bring it up? And so my thought on it is, listen, the person who's experienced the loss, we're keenly aware of the loss.
Yeah, always.
There is nothing you are going to say that is going to be like, oh, I had, you know what? I had forgotten that that happened, right? And you just reminded me of it. So now I'm not happy with you. Usually that's not the case at all. I remember loving it when people would ask me about Hugo or tell stories about him or, you know, bring him up in conversation, because to do anything else was like having this giant elephant in the room and it was just awkward, right? But then, you know, the person who's experienced the loss doesn't always want to bring it up. So it's okay to talk with a person who has gone through a loss about the loss. We don't, and here's another thing. This is my last thing. When somebody says, let me know what you need, that is also a question or a statement that the bereaved doesn't usually know what to do with. We don't know what we need. If we knew what we needed, we might be inclined to ask for it. But most often when somebody says, let me know what you need. So just do something for someone. Just do something. Pick an act of service and do it, right? Mow their lawn. You know, anything. I had friends get my kids' school supplies because Hugo died in the beginning of August, and they came and they didn't ask me. They just went and they got the school supplies. They got them new backpacks. They, you know, they just handled it.
That's
they just
awesome.
Jumped in areas of my life. They did not ask. They just helped. And I appreciated that so much. You can always ask someone, hey, if I did this, would it help you? But don't expect them to know what they need and to reach out to you because they just don't know. And then they're probably thinking they don't want to bother you.
Yeah. And usually you're in a pretty vulnerable and difficult place to start reaching out for help, where if somebody were just to help, then you can appreciate that a lot more. Even if it wasn't exactly what you were looking for or hoping for, that someday down the road, you will remember that.
Yes. I had a good friend who just, she ran point for me. She kind of, like, she was my PR person. Mm-hmm. And I didn't ask her to do that, but she just basically stepped in and said, nobody, all questions go to me. Like, I'm handling all of it. Do not talk to her. Do not, like, come to me. And I really appreciated having somebody who was kind of my spokesperson while I caught my breath.
Yeah, that's amazing. You're doing amazing work. Keep doing your podcast. I love it. Thanks for sharing it and sharing your experience with grief and then how you have used it to mesh it together with your life that you can live still a beautiful life and teaching other people that.
Yeah, we are all capable of creating a future that we love. It does not matter what has happened in the past. And it's a possibility. And if people aren't considering it, I hope they will through the work that you are doing and the work that I am doing.
Yeah, thank you.
So much.
How can people connect with you, work with you, and follow your journey?
So I love connecting with people on social media. So on Instagram, they can find me at Life Coach Krista, and it's Krista with a K, Life Coach Krista. And on Facebook, Coaching with Krista. Mm-hmm. And then my website is coachingwithkrista.com. And then, of course, you already mentioned the podcast, the Widowed Mom podcast, but any of those vehicles are great ways to connect with me. I love doing lives on social media and, you know, connecting with people and via DM.
Yeah. Perfect. I will link those in the show notes so people can find you easily. I really appreciate you chatting with me and sharing your knowledge and experience.
Well, thank you so much, Megan, for the work that you're doing. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your listeners too.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on another episode of the Cultivated Family Podcast. While this episode is over, you can continue to join me in conversation on Instagram or Facebook at Cultivated Family. I would love to see you there.